This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the Prime Minister, Paolo Gentiloni, is certainly feeling the political pressure on this issue. And it's quite remarkable that even though he and the centre-left Democratic Party that he represents support citizenship rights for the children of migrants, they feel it's such a political hot potato at the moment that now is not the time to push this bill forward.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna, who says Italy has delayed a vote on a measure that could have granted citizenship to children born of migrant parents. Details coming up.
Also, a suicide bomb attack kills at least 8 people in northeastern Nigeria, and boat tragedies in Cameroon and the DRC claim more than 60 lives.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, at least 8 people are reported dead in Maiduguri in northeastern Nigeria after another suicide bomb attack. 15 others were injured. A Borno state official tells AFP that a female bomber who was being pursued by residents ran into a mosque and set off her explosives. It happened in the London City area of Maiduguri about 5:30 a.m. local time. Authorities say 2 other female suicide bombers were shot dead as they tried to cross a defensive ditch around the city, and another blew herself up in the suburb of Samari. No injuries reported there. It's the second time in a week that 4 female bombers launched an attack on the Borno state capital. Last week, at least 19 people were killed and more than 20 injured.
A boat tragedy off the coast of Cameroon yesterday claimed at least 34 lives. The country's defense minister tells the Associated Press a military vessel was on a routine trip to the Bakassi Peninsula when it sank. 3 soldiers were rescued. The cause of the sinking is under investigation.
There's another boat tragedy to report. This one happened early Friday morning on the Kasai River in the DRC. AFP reports at least 27 people were killed. More than 50 others are missing, so the death toll could go much higher. We're just hearing about the accident today from a local official. Details of the accident are still lacking.
Humanitarian groups are criticizing a measure that they say will make it harder for them to rescue migrants on the Mediterranean. The European Commission and the EU border control agency Frontex have given preliminary approval for a code of conduct for rescue vessels. The code proposed by Italy would block NGO vessels from talking to people, smugglers, by phone to learn the whereabouts of migrant-filled boats. The use of signal lights is banned too. NGOs that refuse to comply with the code of conduct could be banned from using Italian ports. What's more, the NGO rescue vessels must only operate in international waters and not enter Libyan territorial waters. Most of the migrant vessels depart from Libya. Other rules include not interfering with the Italian coast when it intercepts a vessel and making public their sources of funding for rescue operations.
Italy's government has delayed a vote on a bill that could have led to citizenship for children born to migrant parents in Italy. The measure could have allowed immediate citizenship or after 5 years of schooling. The proposal has the support of Prime Minister Paolo Gentiloni, but parliamentary votes may be lacking due to public pressure over the large influx of migrants. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following developments. She spoke with me about the bill and why a vote's been postponed.
Well, many people outside Italy would not be aware that the children of migrants who are born in Italy don't necessarily have citizenship. They have no citizenship rights. And this is a very significant piece of legislation where the government is trying to guarantee the rights of children of migrants. Under the bill, it would be applied to those who have one parent who has legally been in Italy for 5 years. So it would not apply to people who have just arrived or people seeking asylum. This has really raised concern across Italy and exposed the divisions, the political divisions that exist in this country amidst the tidal wave of migrants that we're seeing arriving here.
Why is the bill being delayed and what is the division? What is causing the problems with the bill?
Well, this is significant. The Prime Minister, Paolo Gentiloni, is certainly feeling the political pressure on this issue. And it's quite remarkable that even though he and the centre-left Democratic Party that he represents support citizenship rights for the children of migrants, they feel it's such a political hot potato at the moment that now is not the time to push this bill forward, and the party would be in danger of not being able to carry it in the parliament. So this bill is now being postponed. Will it be postponed or will it be dropped altogether? He's saying at the moment it will be postponed because of difficulties that they're seeing in the community. He says that he has a personal commitment to ensure that it's passed later in the year, but it's still difficult to say whether the centre-left and its supporters could carry that through the parliament. And incidentally, last week there was a poll in Italy showing that this bill was losing support among Italians. And that's significant because, as we know, we've seen 86,000 migrants land in Italy this year. We've seen a 10% rise in the number of migrants coming here this year. There's no sign of the numbers slowing down. Just in the last couple of days, 6,500 migrants have disembarked in a couple of Italian ports. These numbers are not slowing down, and the political pressure in Italy, particularly in small towns and villages being asked to host a growing number of migrants, is really provoking great political division in this country.
So far then, what has been the political reaction to this?
The anti-immigrant Northern League is jubilant about this decision. They are saying that it's a political victory. They want to see what they call a stop to the invasion of migrants in this country. Meanwhile, one of the Catholic migrant organisations is very upset about this decision. UNICEF, incidentally, made a statement saying, "We have wanted this bill for so long, we can afford to wait a couple months longer." So they still believe, that organisation still believes that it may go through. But that gives you some idea of the political spectrum, the points of view in this country. And it's really troubling too when you do meet young Italians, the children of migrants who see themselves as Italian, who are going to Italian schools, completely fluent in Italian, have grown up in this country, still feel terribly upset and alienated because they don't have those citizenship rights guaranteed to them, even though they were born and have grown up in this country.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna speaking to us from Italy.
Zimbabwe's continuing cash crisis is adding to the nation's list of woes. The government has been pushing to resolve the problem, which has led to long lines of citizens trying to get cash from their banks. From Harare, reporter Kudzai Zanashi has details.
It is 6 o'clock in the morning in Zimbabwe's capital, Harare, and some of the residents are waking up to start their day. But some are not in their beds. They've been sleeping all night on pavements so they can be one of the first customers to get cash when banks open. The acute cash crisis that hit the country last year still persists despite government's efforts to curb the situation. Professor Ashok Chakravarti provides guidance and oversight for a project under the executive branch called the Ease of Doing Business Program. It's expected to provide the investment environment within 200 days. He cites one key ingredient of the liquidity crisis, the shortage of US dollars to buy imported goods.
You know, we are a dollarized economy, right? What that implies is that we must have a source of US dollars. So if we don't have a source, a proper source of US dollars, we are inevitably going to be short of cash in the country. So Zimbabwe has no proper source of US dollars. So everybody comes here to take US dollars and go. It's not only Zimbabweans who want the dollars. Everybody wants those dollars from outside as well.
The Zimbabwe government introduced bond notes last November, a surrogate currency trading within the borders of Zimbabwe, but equivalent to the US dollar. In the black markets and some circles, the proxy currency is not trading at par with the US dollar. The dollar is trading at a higher rate. Charlene Vuta is a student at a local university. She explains the trouble she has to go through to get cash.
It has made it difficult to pay my school fees. Sometimes the swipe machines do not work and you spend the whole day there. It delays a lot of stuff. Then expenses have increased. The fact that if I want money from EcoCash, for example, to pay my rent from school, they want 10% of the money that I want to use for rent, which means my mom, if she wants to send $70, they want $7 from that. That means she has to send $77.
EcoCash is Zimbabwe's biggest mobile money service, which allows people to make transactions from their phones without the need for a bank account. The demands for fees from EcoCash agents are not unusual. The only alternative is to seek cash from the booming black markets. Edmoka Goro is a dealer.
It's all business. Cash is business nowadays in Zimbabwe. With the fact that we're using bond notes and the US dollar. So it's all business. And for me, I do EcoCash. I take 15% of whatever amount you cash out. For me, it's lucrative because it's business. And there's no cash going around in Zimbabwe.
His customers range from individuals who dread the long lines at the bank to businesses that need the US dollar to restock with imports. While introducing a local currency may be the ultimate solution, economists say it will be met with great resistance. The old Zimbabwean dollar was shelved in 2009 at a time when the country was reaching record-breaking levels of hyperinflation. Chakravarti says one long-term solution would be to adopt the South African rand, since Zimbabwe has strong financial and trade links with its neighbor. The government has been promoting the use of electronic money, but critics say that will not be a success since majority of Zimbabweans are in the informal sector and do not have bank accounts. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunawashe from Harare.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yisu Heap, 17 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. A suicide bomb attack kills at least 8 people in northeastern Nigeria. Both tragedies in Cameroon and the DRC have claimed more than 60 lives so far, and Zimbabwe's continuing cash crisis is adding to the nation's list of problems. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Rains have broken the worst drought in South Africa in more than a century. There is a bumper harvest of maize on the way, a lot of it destined for other parts of Africa where a billion people eat corn as their staple diet. South African production of other grains and meat is also increasing. Yet one of the country's major agricultural unions says the future of local commercial farmers remains dire. Darren Taylor reports.
Chris Van Sale is deputy manager of the TLU, representing thousands of South African commercial farmers. Van Sale says their importance to Southern Africa and beyond is underestimated because large-scale farming of food crops and job creation has failed across the region. Foreigners are thus streaming into South Africa.
Approximately 33,000 commercial farmers in South Africa are currently ensuring food security for a population determined by Statistics South Africa to be about 55 million. But if we include the number of foreigners which have crossed our borders, the total number of people in South Africa depending on at least a meal a day is in excess of about 65 million.
In 1994, when South Africa became a democracy, the TLU says there were 65,000 white commercial farmers in the country. Their decrease, says Van Sale, is because they and their workers are under siege, as he describes it.
We've had a huge problem with violent crimes on farms. And in this case, according to the statistics available to us, almost 2,000 farm dwellers have been murdered since January 1990. I have not included the consequences of injury, of loss of limb, or the trauma, and I've not included the results of theft, especially stock theft, which is running rife at the moment.
Some political parties in South Africa say white-owned farmland must simply be given to blacks. The Department of Agriculture itself says if white landowners continue abandoning food production, it'll fill their absence partly with smallholder black farmers. Van Sail describes this as impractical.
Now, if we think that with the restricted area of high potential agricultural land, we can produce sufficient food for the population as well as for neighboring countries, then I think everybody is in for a surprise, because small-scale farming will not be able to produce the volumes which are required.
The drought was particularly bad in western South Africa, where many ranches raise beef cattle. Van Sail says the government's support with fodder to prevent farmers slaughtering starving cattle arrived too late. The agricultural department has acknowledged this.
Many of the stock farmers had to drastically reduce their herds, and it will take at least 4 to 5 years before those farmers can again reach the levels of income prior to the drought. Some of the dry land maize and corn farmers could not put a harvest in the soil. That resulted in a total lack of income,
leaving many, says Van Sail, under severe pressure.
Recently, the suicide of a well-known farmer in the Eastern Cape was reported. It was recently reported by a representative of an insurance company that suicide amongst farmers last year has increased by 20%.
Economists estimate South African farmers owe about 160 billion rand, or about $12 billion in debt. Van Sail says many won't be able to afford this. They're leaving the land and placing much of Southern Africa's future food security in jeopardy. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
The steady influx of South Sudanese refugees into Uganda has strained the country's resources, including natural resources. Deforestation is now a growing problem. Millions of trees have been cut down by the refugees as they try to find a new home in Uganda's Adjumani district. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Over 200,000 South Sudanese refugees have settled in Adjumani district. They have cut down trees for firewood and cleared the land to build settlements. Gaya Charles is Adjumani's natural resources officer.
Close to 11 square kilometers of land has been offered for settling refugees in Adjumani district. And if you calculated the biomass or the tree cover or the number of trees in these 11 square kilometers, is over 15 million trees. But if we concentrated ourselves on the current influx, 10,350 acres of lands have been given to refugees, particularly for their activities. That, if you translated that in terms of the probably the number of trees that will be affected, is close to 11 million trees affected.
Stanley Miselani is head of the UN Refugee Agency's office in Adjumani. He says to address the deforestation problem, relief organizations have teamed up with the government of Uganda to find lasting solutions.
We are working with government, and that is allowing us to pursue the environmental-related activities in line with the district development plans.
So we are very much on top of environmental control.
Plans include reforestation, tree nurseries have been set up, and refugees are given 10 trees to plant, along with other relief items. Idro Gaetano from Lutheran World Foundation supervises one of the tree nurseries in the Ailo refugee settlement.
We raise seedlings of assorted tree species. We give them out to the local community, including the refugees in the settlement, to plant. And this program is just meant to support the community to plant trees, because with the settlement of the Sudanese refugees in the area, a lot of the land being overused, a lot of trees are cut down. So we thought it wise to raise seedlings and support them so that they are able to plant trees to replace the one they cut.
However, Natural Resources Officer Giaya is afraid most of the tree planting initiatives may not be sustainable. Most of them are temporary projects that can end any time.
The current money that we have, we need to procure seedlings, we give to farmers to plant. But in tree planting, you don't only stop at distributing seedlings. You should be able to take it a step further so that it is established as a forest. The only problem is that most of these activities are projects. 1 year, 2 years, the project ends. But if we had probably a program that establishes a plantation and manages up to about 3 years, when the trees can now be on their own, we shall succeed in replacing these trees.
About $200,000 is needed annually to replace the trees that have been cut down in Adjumani District refugee settlements. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Sidrak Franklin, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth discussion on African elections. What makes a ballot credible? Some political observers say African elections are often merely selections. We'll tackle the difference on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bunganyan in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.